morning, everyone. Our first case is on the speakerphone, is that right? Are we? Let me know when we're all set. We're all set? Okay. So the first case of the morning would be Samaharo versus Gonzalez. Counsel for the petitioner is on speakerphone. Can you hear us?
I can hear
you. Okay. Why don't you want to get seated here, and then we'll have you state your name, and then we'll get started, and we'll make sure the volume's adjusted and all that. Okay, you may proceed. Let me interrupt you just a second. Wait a minute.
Oh, dear.
Mr. McKinney, can you interrupt him? Mr. McKinney?
Yes, sir.
For whatever reason, the volume isn't very good here, so I want you to try to speak as close and as loud as you can so we can get the best of your argument. I understand your situation while you're arguing by speakerphone, but try to talk as loud as you can, and we'll do the best we can. Apparently, when we ask questions, you can't hear us, and so you might hesitate every once in a while, so we might be able to get a question in. So go ahead. Well, not too much, but we'll do the best we can.
Okay. I'll just try to follow up, and if there's a question, I'll be happy to address it. I just wanted to briefly overview provide a quick overview of the facts, which are very short here. The petitioner was a secondary school teacher in Ivory Coast. In 1996, he joined what's called in English the Assembly of Republicans, African and French as LDR. Ultimately becoming a regional leader. In 1999, they had elections in Ivory Coast. There was a leadership and then sat down on political dissent. The petitioner testified in April of 2000. He was arrested at his place of employment at the school and was detained for approximately 2 weeks, during which time he was beaten and deprived of water. After he refused to sign a document disavowing his political party membership and accusing the LDR political party leader, Alfari Ouattara, of inciting rebellion in Ivory Coast. After that 2 week detention, when his mother returned to his school, he was fired, allegedly for being absent without leave. His mother testified that he believed it was due to his political party membership that he was fired from his job. A few months later, in October of 2000, new elections were held, which Ash State Department office emphasized were also marred by violence and irregularities. According to Ash State Department, left at least 26% of the population politically disenfranchised non-citizens. The testimony before the immigration court was in October 2000. Death squads were sent out to kill members of political opposition parties, including the LDR. Ishmael fled his native country of Ivory Coast in December of 2000 and testified that other associated fields were not so lucky. His regional assistant was murdered, and his maternal uncle was arrested and to date is still in prison. In April 2001, he sought the protection of the United States through an application for asylum, withholding removal, and an incorporated cat claim convention against torture. That application was referred to an immigration judge and set for hearing. September 2002, previous counsel, I represent his model for purposes of this appeal, asked his client to assemble corroborating documents for trial. During this period of time in September 2002, additional hostilities broke out in Ivory Coast. Documentation became difficult to assemble, but a package was finally sent, but as the record shows, it was addressed incompletely and transit of the package was delayed. So on the date of the hearing, which was the first time it was set for trial, the previous counsel moved for a continuance to allow the package to arrive. the judge, immigration judge, surmising that the DHL receipt, it'll just be a receipt for an empty container, denied the request. And then, of course, the immigration judge then, during the proceedings, showed in the record, ran back to Ishmael for failing to corroborate his testimony.
Mr. McKinney?
Yes, Judge.
As far as the judge, what he was speculating that this was just an empty package to cause delay, is that what you say?
At one point in the record, the immigration judge surmised that he didn't know it was just a package. As far as he knew, it could be a receipt for an empty package.
And then the package arrived 2 days later, is that what we're saying?
That's correct.
And I assume... And the record shows that there were several things in the package that were relevant, I guess. Is that correct?
No, that is not contained in the record, Judge.
That's contained in that
record. The judge made a decision that day.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, could I just, this is Judge Wood, just say when you say that's not contained in the record, you're being very specific that the record before the immigration judge necessarily didn't show what was in the box. But in a sense, you have, if you will, proffered in your brief that that was what the package would hold?
Correct, Judge.
Okay.
In fact, because the decision was made that day, the record was closed that day. So the opportunity to provide that documentary evidence was denied.
What about the image? This is Judge Wood again. What about the, I guess, the implication in the government's brief that the immigration judge did not abuse his discretion in refusing the continuance because Mr. Sumaharo had enough time anyway to accumulate these documents, and, you know, in a sense, if he waited so long, why should the hearing be continued?
Right. I think it's a valid point because there was a substantial period of time, I'm assuming due to the docket, between the master calendar hearing and the individual hearing. However, I guess under the circumstances, it's a clear abuse of discretion for a few simple reasons. Number one, what was the inconvenience to the court? In this case, the inconvenience to the court was minimal. The government, in this case, called zero witnesses, no witnesses. So a continuance of this matter, if the judge didn't want to take testimony before receiving the document, it would have been inconvenient to no one. There was one witness in this case, and that witness was the petitioner, the person asking for the continuance. Second of all, the document, a question that was being proffered by counsel, were critical to the corroboration requirement, which the judge ultimately found we are assuming to be necessary. Again, the central focus of our argument here is that this immigration judge failed to make any credibility finding at all. No credibility finding at all. We concur with the respondent's brief at page 13 that the judge, quote, expressed significant doubt in his father's testimony, but nowhere in this record we find any credibility determination. And I think that's the problem. So the judge obviously put a lot of emphasis on the lack of documentation. So I think when you balance the inconvenience to the court with the significance of the documents that were being proffered, there was a clear abuse of discretion. I mean, we mentioned in our brief that it would have been appropriate if the judge could have gone ahead and taken the testimony and provided it that long to provide the documentation and then subsequently issued the decision. But the judge even refused to do that.
Is there, just out of curiosity, once you have the DHL receipt, was there a specific amount of time you were asking for, or previous counsel was asking for as a continuance?
It was only characterized in the record as short.
Okay.
A short continuance. I would assume that if the judge would have entertained some type of specificity that the court could have brought out the dates that were available to start the hearing too, but it never got to that point, the immigration judge.
Your orange light's on. Do you want to reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Okay, fine. Ms. Lynch.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Susan Lynch, and I'm representing Attorney General Gonzalez here today. We request that the petitioner's petition be denied for three basic reasons. The first reason is that the petitioner did not provide sufficient evidence to rise to the level of past persecution. And
are you really saying that if we believed what he says, this wasn't persecution? Because that's kind of stunning, actually. I mean, I can certainly see if you're making a credibility argument that maybe he was exaggerating or something, which would lead you into a different problem, namely the lack of a square decision. But how is this not persecution in light of the law, if one were to believe all of his account?
Yes, Your Honor, that is definitely our position, that this activity does not rise to the level of past persecution, as the immigration judge found. And, in fact, the one incident that we're looking at to see if it is past persecution is this alleged detention in April.
A two-week detention,
yes.
Daily beating, minimal food and water, and rubbing salt into open wounds.
That's correct. And let me take them one by one. First and foremost,
But it's all together, of course. It's not like he was only kept for 2 weeks in the Ritz Hotel. He was kept
correct.
For 2 weeks under very negative circumstances.
Yes, the government basically has two responses to that. First is, based on the law of this court, we don't believe that this activity rises to the level of past persecution, and I can cite the cases. And the second is...
This is worse than Dandan, if that's one of the cases you're going to cite.
Right. The cases that I was going to cite are Ciorba, Borca, and Scalic, and excuse my pronunciations, but in Ciorba there was an interrogation, a search, and a taking of property. In Scalic, there was harassment and jailing for 6 days. And in Borsa, there was, again, interrogation and threatening phone calls. So our position is that, you know, under the law of Magani and others, this is certainly harassment, but harassment doesn't rise to the level of persecution. That's our first argument. Our second argument is the only evidence, quote, evidence that we have here about this event is the evidence which Mr. Samaro presents himself.
And but of course, we know about the movie Catch-22, right? I mean, it's not like he says, trust me, there will be corroborating evidence. He shows the DHL receipt, and the immigration judge could have taken his evidence, kept the record open for a reasonable period of time, wouldn't have even had to reconvene things, could have waited for a week to see if it came, and then proceeded to come to a decision. Would have been a very small thing to do.
Well, Your Honor, I think that if we take the record of that immigration hearing in context, I think it'll give us a better picture. For example, the judge asked numerous times of Mr. Samaro, well, do you have evidence of, for example, your entry into the country? Do you have evidence of the fact? And he had absolutely no paperwork after allegedly being in the country for 3 weeks and so forth.
Why would he have paperwork on those things?
Well, the judge specifically asked, said, well, you know, do you have a flight ticket to indicate that you came into the country? Do you have a bus ticket to indicate you came from New York to Moline, Illinois? Do we know when you actually
But what would he have learned that Mr. What's his name? Mr. Sumahoro entered the country? He's sitting there.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like this is a tough question.
Yes. Well, to the DHL package, let me go to that a little bit more directly. What happened in the record on page 143 is the immigration judge said, okay, you allegedly have this DHL package coming in. And he says, you don't even know what it contains, do you? And the answer of counsel is no. We don't know what's in this DHL package. Now, later, counsel says that the package arrived and that it contains certain documents. We don't know if these documents would corroborate his story sufficient
I understand that perfectly, and all I'm saying is I don't see why he couldn't have kept the record open. I think it would have been irresponsible of counsel to give a list of what was in the package, given the difficulties of obtaining documentation in the Ivory Coast. You know, suppose counsel had said it's going to have his birth certificate and it's going to have his graduation certificate and so on, and then it came and it didn't have the graduation certificate. Counsel wants to be careful about representations like that.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think the reason that we're here is because what the immigration judge did was he took the package and he looked at it, you know, being the person on the ground reviewing the evidence, and said, what we have here is a case where there isn't sufficient the standard is the evidence must be consistent, sufficiently detailed, and believable in order for corroboration not to be required. And that is under a series of board decisions, primarily SMJ.
Can you define the term believable for me? Is that a purely subjective term, or is that something that has some objective content to it?
Well, in SMJ, this standard arose, basically the decision was that the burden was to provide sufficient evidence to support the position that the petitioner is taking.
No, I understand that, but you use that. I mean, the phrase comes up a lot in immigration opinions, and I'm never really sure what it means. Detail, I understand. You know,
yes.
Somebody could be summary or somebody could give lots of details. He gives plenty of details. Believable sounds kind of like a gut reaction to me.
It sounds a little bit like credible. However,
unfortunately here, maybe after the Real ID Act, these IJs will in fact bite the bullet and make credibility determinations, but it's very frustrating when they don't.
Yes, Your Honor, and in fact, the SMJ case is one that was lauded as sort of the basis for this idea of the corroboration rule. So hopefully it is moving in that direction. But what the problem is here is that the judge took the immigration judge took the basic analysis and said this is not Mr. Sumoharo's testimony is not sufficiently believable and detailed such that we need more corroboration. And what he lacked, the judge said, this lack of corroboration goes to two things: credibility and burden of proof. It goes to the fact that because we don't know when this individual came into the country, what his ethnicity is, whether he was a secondary school teacher for 19 years, his membership in the RDR, which is the Assembly of Republicans, which was the basis for his whole political asylum claim, any medical reports to support his beatings. Because we don't have any of this, we believe that his burden of proof was not met. What evidence, and let me move to the second issue.
But how should we take, does the immigration judge really find that he isn't from the Ivory Coast?
No, Your Honor.
I mean, does the immigration judge make a finding about his characteristics?
No, Your Honor, the immigration judge does not. The immigration judge says that taking the record in total, there is not sufficient, and you know, the immigration judge cites specifically to the cases that I just mentioned in the board decisions and said, because it is not sufficiently believable, consistent, and detailed, corroborating evidence is necessary. Because there was no corroborating evidence, this individual did not meet his burden of proof. The immigration judge then goes on to say that there also is not sufficient evidence of a well-founded fear of future persecution. And in order for that to be the case, relying on a series of cases in this court, in the Sayak Singh case, for example, says that in order to have a well-founded fear of future persecution, it must be both subjectively genuine fear and reasonable in light of the objective evidence.
Right, but let me read you a sentence from the immigration judge's opinion. It's on page 12.
Yes, Your Honor.
He says, in the instant case, the court finds the respondent's account of the circumstances fleeing the Ivory Coast to come to the United States, allegedly in December of year 2000, resulting because of the alleged incarceration in May in which the respondent was detained 2 weeks and allegedly was questioned and mistreated or ill-treated, period. There's nothing that he finds. He doesn't finish the sentence.
That's true.
And then he just says the court doesn't believe that incident in and of itself rises to past persecution if indeed it occurred. So he's not finding it didn't occur. He's not finding it did occur. He's throwing us back into whether that actually, your first point basically, is throwing us back into that. And the tenor of the whole opinion seems like he's at least assuming arguendo. This is all about the Ivory Coast. This is what he looks to. He looks to country reports, claims the guy might not even be Islamic. I mean, I don't know. It seems very unsatisfactory.
Well, what the judge is saying is that it is a unique case in that we are faced with absolutely no.
But it's not unique. People who are refugees frequently come without corroborating evidence. We've had people who fled countries with nothing but the shirt on their back, and they don't go to their persecutors and say, by the way, please give me a big dossier of documentation so that the immigration judge will believe that I am who I am. And it sounds like if Nelson Mandela had shown up in the middle of the 70s, we would have said, we don't know you're from Africa, or, you know, anybody's been persecuting you.
Right, Your Honor. And, you know, and unfortunately, the standard that, you know, that we're faced with here is that while the immigration judge's opinion may not be stellar and perfect, unless this evidence and opinion compels a contrary conclusion, and there's substantial evidence to compel a conclusion to the contrary, then the immigration judge's opinion must stand. Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I briefly conclude?
Yes, wrap it up.
Yes. Finally, I would just say to the due process point, which is the final point, there was no prejudice here under Wigglesworth because, in essence, this particular petitioner had four opportunities to present this evidence and waited 2 years to get information that could potentially corroborate his testimony. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McKinney?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You've got a minute or so. We'll give you a little time, given the circumstances. Go ahead.
I just want to say, first and foremost, in rebuttal, that we're not asking for the court to find that Mr. Sumaworo has established an asylum case. We're asking for a fair and rational decision based on a hearing where there is an adequate opportunity to present the evidence of an asylum case before a decision is made. Regarding the simple testimony of Mr. Sumaworo, we believe in that based on his testimony, if you believe is true, he has met his burden of proof with regards to establishing past persecution. We very much disagree with the government's position that the cases that they cited in their brief at page 16, which were again repeated by Ms. Lynch, in any way compare to the testimony of Mr. Sumaworo. Again, you're talking about aliens that testified that they had rocks thrown at their house or that they were detained from 1 to 3 days. We're talking about a 2 week period of time of sustained beatings and deprivation of water. And I don't see any analogy between Mr. Sumaworo's testimony and these cases cited by the government. I believe it's clear that if this testimony is true, he's established past persecution. So the fundamental problem here and why we think that this case compels a remand is the lack of a credibility determination. Just to quote Judge Posner, the recent case, it's number 04-1700 that came out after the order of a brief here, Denley Yao versus Gonzalez. When an immigration judge says not that he believes the asylum seeker or he disbelieves her, but instead states that she hasn't carried her burden of proof, the reviewing court is left in the dark as to whether the judge thinks the asylum seeker failed to carry a burden of proof because her testimony was not credible or for some other reason. I think that this court is left very much in the dark by this decision, especially in the paragraph quoted by Judge Wood just a moment ago. I think that it's an interesting comparison between this case also and the Diallo case, which is 381 F3rd 687, where I would argue that the testimony that the immigration judge made many more findings of fact in that case than the immigration judge did in this case. And, but it was a case where this court was compelled to reverse for the absolute failure to make any credibility findings.
Okay, Mr. McKinney. Your time is up, so wrap it up.
In conclusion, the systemic problems that are being caused by immigration attorneys are just being compounded by the lack of the Board of Immigration Appeals providing meaningful review, which of course has placed the burden on this court. We would ask that this court that this case be remanded back immigration court for a new hearing and a new decision. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement. We'll move on to the second case of